The Parents Show on Mix 92.6. Sponsored by Raiden Solicitors. Award-winning specialist family lawyers. See raidensolicitors.co.uk.
Good evening and welcome to The Parents Show here on Mix 92.6. Coming up later, Neil is joined by Chris Gregory of Harpenden Colts FC, one of the largest grassroots football clubs in the country, with nearly 1,500 players and excess of 350 coaches and volunteers. Chris talks to Neil about the benefits of joining the club for children of all ages and the opportunities for both girls and boys to play football. But first, following on from last week's talk with Jane Opie from Dyslexia Hearts, Lydia meets Eben, a local 14-year-old schoolboy who has dyslexia, ADHD and autism, with his mother Helen, who talk about how Eben copes both at school and at home.
So as part of the month of dyslexia awareness, we're going to be talking to a lovely young man from St Albans who's going to tell us about his experience of having dyslexia. So thanks, Eben and Helen, for joining us on the Parents Show this evening. It's lovely to have you here.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you for having us.
So, Eben, you're 14, is that right?
Yes.
Right. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
So I go to Bowen School year 10. Yeah, year 10. I'm 14. Took me a second to remember that one. And
what subjects do you enjoy at school?
So I tend to enjoy drama. And so before, I didn't like any interactive things in my life, any like social at all. And in the last few years, I've just taken a liking for drama and actually being more social and like going around talking to people more. So that's why I'm taking a liking towards drama more.
That's brilliant. That's fantastic. And do you get lots of opportunities to do it at school?
Yeah. I mean, I think the school really helps me.
Yeah, Evan's doing GCSE drama and he's just also started a weekend club as well with Best Theatre Arts, local company, so he's been enjoying that as well. So it's good.
Fantastic. And there's lots of interesting elements to you, Eben. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about you?
Oh yeah, I have autism, ADHD and dyslexia.
That's three wonderful elements to you. Tell us how is that?
I mean, it's quite hard to distinguish the lines between the three sometimes, but I've known about the ADHD for the longest. We actually thought I would have had dyslexia in primary school, but when we went to get the diagnosis, we figured out that I had ADHD instead. And then later on, it was about 4 years later, I also got diagnosed for dyslexia.
And in the middle of those, the autism diagnosis
and autism
as well.
In the middle,
So you've had a busy few years in and out of specialists figuring out what's going on. And how did you feel about getting the dyslexia diagnosis?
I mean, it felt perfectly fine, normal, because I've been prepared that I will most likely have it for years and years. So my it wasn't too much of a surprise, honestly.
And what does having dyslexia mean for you? So if parents are out there and they're thinking, how will I know if my child has dyslexia? What difference does it make to you?
Before a few years ago, like 3 years ago, I really couldn't read. I couldn't read. And then just like quite a fair few years ago, I suddenly I found a book that I liked, and when I liked it, I taught myself how to read through that book. And now I'm actually a really avid reader. Like, I read all the time, every day.
That's fantastic. I'm sure there's a lot of parents out there wishing they could say their children were avid readers.
I think if you told me that when Evan was in primary school, I probably would have been quite surprised to hear it, because he didn't read fluently till year six. So for any parent who is concerned about that, just to reassure you that he didn't read till year six, but now reads age appropriate books, if not older than his age, and plows through them. So yeah, it's amazing turnaround.
Isn't that fantastic news? And what made the difference, Helen?
I think Evan's brain just clicks. I think, like with most things in terms of Evan, when Evan's brain has worked out his best way of doing something, it all seems to fall into place. So I think whilst he's always a bit later than everybody else developing skills, he's not a silly boy. So there's lots and lots of amazing things about his brain. It's just finding what works for him in terms of learning strategies. So
yeah, I found that when I'm trying to figure out like a strategy, something, I need to actually be persevered to want to be able to find a strategy. And in primary school, I just really didn't have that perseverance to find one. But secondary school, I found that perseverance and I learned how to do things my way instead of the way other people told me to do it.
That's so encouraging and it's so brilliant to hear, Evan. You know, it's really, really, it's fantastic. And can you see yourself when you're persevering with something, can you see that you need to keep going, and do you see a goal ahead of you? How do you approach it?
I can always see that I need to keep going. It's not always easy to keep going. Sometimes I'm like, can I be bold to do this at this current moment of time? a lot of the time it happens, but when I do persevere, it does pay off quite often.
I think one of the big things for Evan is that everything that Evan has to do at school and has had to do over the years feels a lot harder for him than it might do for a child who doesn't have the neurodiversity aspects of their personality. So I think it's more exhausting for Evan to go to school and to step up every day. And he's also started secondary school much further behind than everyone else. So the gap is much bigger and he's closing it and he's doing amazingly. So his attitude has definitely had a big part of that, I think.
That it's just wonderful to hear. You must be so proud, Helen.
Very proud. I get, every time I think about Evan, even taking a GCSE, I get all emotional because I think there was times in primary school, because Evan's behaviour was quite challenging in primary school, there's definitely times where we weren't sure if he'd be able to stay in a mainstream school from the learning perspective and from an emotional perspective. But the fact that he's going to school, he's enjoying it, he's loving the learning, his attitude, sometimes he says, loving the learning sometimes. But yeah, his attitude is completely transformed and I'm excited to see what he's going to achieve in the future.
You've got to keep surprising your mom, Eben.
I plan to.
That's brilliant to hear. And listen, are there good and bad parts to having dyslexia? And can you tell us about the good bits and maybe the bad bits too?
I mean, one of the bits that I find that is actually a challenge is the fact that I can't seem to, like, my writing is significantly slower. Like, no matter how much I've done it, my writing can be significantly slower. So, like, when the teacher tells us to write down, like, a sentence or something, everyone else is done with it, and the teacher rubs off the board, and then I haven't finished writing it down. And then that's what I find challenging, not being able to write things down as quickly as I should be.
And also as your brain works, I think.
Yeah.
Evan at the moment is exploring some use of voice recognition software for GCSE access arrangements. And I think he's been, I'll speak for you, but yeah, you can carry on and say, but seems to be going really well because I think Evan's got the ideas and the vocabulary and all of those things that he needs. It's just doesn't match up with how quickly you can get it on the page. So maybe you want to talk about that a little bit.
I mean, I was actually going to tell you yesterday that I feel like the speech software might be the difference between me passing the English GCSE, because with English, I feel like I have the ideas, I just don't have the speed of writing or the spelling. Oh, I don't get marks for spelling anyway with them.
Yeah, spelling is a problem. Just a small issue.
But that's fantastic. So you're exploring ways. So voice recognition sounds like a bit of a deal breaker. That's great. And do you find it easy to use? Does it fit into the classroom routine? How does it work?
You can't really use it when a class with loads of other people because it picks up the sound of other people talking. It's a bit difficult to use at first, but once you get used to how clear you need to be with your voice and how loud you need to be, I can do entire paragraphs without messing up a single word of it.
It's quite a new thing for Evan. So he's been working on it in learning support sessions at school. And the hope is that he'll be able to then use it, as we say, in exams, which will put him on a much more even playing field than some of his peers will be. So yeah, hopefully pull out his potential.
That's great news. And what are the positives for you of having dyslexia? Do you see things the other students around you don't see?
There's probably the point where I'm going to get dyslexia confused with other things. But I tend to notice patterns in, like, especially there's a school put up a display board, like, set, like saying, like, yes, this is all the clubs we do. I've seemed to notice, like, weird shapes, patterns and pictures made out of those. Like, I just square them together or something. I mean, it probably was not arranged like that specifically, but I find that I can notify patterns that other people don't. And
I think Emma's very creative as well, yeah. Which I think his mind definitely works in a different way. And some of that will be dyslexia, some of it will be the ADHD and the autism as well, all coming to play to make his mind fascinating.
But that's also probably why drama's coming to the fore now, as you get to know yourself, Eben, and it's just wonderful to hear how self-aware you are. I think it's fantastic. It's pushing you forward, making you persevere with new things, and it's brilliant. And have you found your confidence has grown in secondary school?
I've work towards growing my confidence, because I didn't really have much when I came to secondary school. And making yourself more confident, or just not confident in general, just more confident with yourself, makes you feel better, makes you feel like you can do it. Like, whenever I feel that I can't do this, or like what I can't do something, as long as I just persevere and have confidence in myself, I can get through it.
I think a lot of it is unpicking what it felt like to be a learner in primary school as well, because primary school was not Eben shaped. It didn't suit him. Learning styles just didn't suit him, and he wasn't really accessing a lot of classroom learning at all. So I think a lot of it is almost overcoming some of the trauma of that and what learning felt like. And I know not all young people are able to overcome that and often have quite a lot of baggage around learning, but I think something about secondary school, starting secondary school during COVID, when it was all a lot more restricted, was actually beneficial for Eben in terms of making it easier.
Great to hear. How did it make it easier?
I don't know. I've actually been trying to consider that. We actually had a conversation with my friends about this.
Well, it's hard to imagine because you've only ever started secondary school during COVID, but I think Eben always struggled with transitions, which I think is probably in part due to his autism. So every year it was quite tricky for the first term in terms of his emotional regulation in school. Mm-hmm. But I think starting during COVID, Eben likes structure and routine. Yeah. So that's been advantageous at secondary school, but also it was even more so structured and routine for COVID, because obviously they were in one classroom and there wasn't a lot of sort of the transitioning and mixing between different classes. So I think a lot of those things really helped just to kind of reduce some of the aspects of starting secondary school that can be a bit overwhelming. So yeah, who knows, that and a little bit of maturity and reinventing yourself as a new person.
Yes, I definitely reinvent myself a new person. I definitely have.
It's probably about getting to know yourself, actually, as you understand more what it means to have dyslexia, to have ADHD, to have autism. You're just doing an absolutely fantastic job, Eben, honestly. And I'd say there's lots of parents listening, either with children who are not neurodiverse, who are neurodiverse, who'd like to learn from you. So what tips would you give to parents out there to help them understand dyslexia or to just be more understanding of our neurodiverse friends and fellow students? No pressure at all.
I knew this question was coming. I just didn't know how to answer it.
I'll talk for a minute. In a way, our household is very neurodiverse, accepting.
A household of understanding because of Jordan.
Yeah, so I work in the autism field. So it's something I think that's probably been part of our dinner time conversations for years. So we're quite lucky, and Eben's quite lucky in that it's not new. It's not anything new for us. But I think a lot of it has just been about, and I think the thing we're most proud about Eben is that how he sees his autism and ADHD and dyslexia, and the fact that he's very accepting of that and proud of it and wants to promote that.
What I would say to parents with people with dyslexia is don't try and see them as the person you want them to be. Try and see them as the person they want to be.
Brilliant.
Absolutely brilliant. Wise words, Eben. That's fantastic. Thank you. Thank you so much. And Helen, for you, what tips would you leave our parents with? Because you've it sounds like you've built such a fantastic environment in your home. And I think I'm sure that's got a role to play in why Eben is so kind of confident and sure of himself. What tips would you give parents out there?
I think one of the big things, it's been a bit of a journey with Eben. And I think if the me 5 or 6 years ago could speak to the me now, just the reassurance that it will be okay. And I think one of the mantras we always had when things were really tricky with Eben in primary school was that I know he's going to be an awesome adult. I know that he's going to do well with his life. Might just be quite rocky on the way there. And he might, you know, even things like when we talk about GCSEs now, it's a balance between saying to Eben, you might not pass them and that's okay because we're totally cool with that. We're so proud of all the progress you've made outside of academic qualifications don't matter to us. We wanted Eben to go through secondary school confident, healthy, happy emotionally, which is exactly where we're at. So if Eben flunks all his GCSEs, we already said we don't care, we're proud of him for as long as he knows he's put the effort in. You can resit your GCSEs when you're older, it doesn't matter, you know, you'll get there eventually. And I think one of the teachers at school took 6 or 7 times to pass his maths GCSE. And when he told Eben that, I think it was quite an epiphany, really, that he's done very well for himself professionally, but it didn't start off particularly easy for him. So having those role models in his life have been really helpful as well, because I'm not neurodiverse. I don't have lived experience of what life is like at school for Eben. So it's always just been trying to empathise and imagine what things must be like for him is a big important thing. But future is rosy, and I think don't put limits on what you think your child is capable of achieving, because about 5 or 6 years ago, we might have thought Eben wouldn't make it into a mainstream secondary, and he's now thriving. So, yeah, you never know what's going to happen.
Brilliant. Eben, Helen, thank you so much for joining us on The Parent Show.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Still on the subject of neurodiversity here on Mix 92.6, Pippa Simu and The Advantage offer support to individuals, primarily to girls and women with a diagnosis or suspected diagnosis of ADHD. In 2017, Pippa was herself diagnosed with ADHD, which highlighted for her the lack of understanding and services for women with the condition. Pippa started The Advantage in 2020, offering support services specifically to women and girls with ADHD symptoms to help them understand and grow into their symptoms. Pippa joined Ian Pritchard on Mixed Mornings recently to tell him all about Advantage.
So most of my work is working one-to-one, and I specialise in supporting girls and women with ADHD.
Okay.
So I have a master's in psychology, so I would call it hold the psychology lightly as we're in the sessions to help girls and women live well with ADHD. And what I hope is that I make myself redundant, you know, that through the process they will learn to be their own coach and learn the principles that they need to live well with ADHD. So that's what I do. I do work with girls in schools. I do also train teachers generally about ADHD, or more specifically around how to spot it in girls and how to support girls with ADHD, because the presentation can be quite different. I advocate for us, and what else do I do? Oh, I have a support group as well. I have a support group, and we have like a social group. So yes, that's what I do.
Fabulous. So I think most of us have probably come across the term ADHD, but for those of us who aren't quite sure what it is, so what do those letters stand for, and what is ADHD?
So the letters stand for Attention Deficit Hyperactivity Disorder. But in Pippa's book, this isn't a terribly helpful way of describing what we're living with. So obviously deficit means less, so it's implying that we have less attention. I would say that from my observations and my learning that we actually have far too much attention. And the problem for us is how to regulate our attention, how to direct our attention to where it needs to be, particularly if we're not interested in that thing. So we are largely interest-driven human beings, and the majority of people, so they tell me, are importance-driven. So even if you told me something was important, I'm not stupid, I'd hear you and I'd understand what you meant. But if I'm not interested, it's going to be really a lot harder for me to bring my attention to it.
So you're saying we there, Pippa, and obviously I hadn't picked up right at the beginning, that you yourself must have ADHD.
I do live with ADHD. I also parent it as well. These things are largely hereditary. So if a person in the family has it, they shouldn't really be alone. there'll be someone else there as well. So yes, I live with it. And I discovered it very late when I was 44. So I'd had many decades of not understanding that about myself. And understanding why you are the way you are is incredibly helpful, I would say.
Of course, of course. And so what sort of struggles have you had personally as a result of the ADHD?
Yeah, so I would say I have been incredibly fortunate in the profession that I chose originally, which was teaching. I was a secondary school teacher, very stimulating, never have the same day twice, always moving around. So that worked very well for me. And also the human beings that are in my life are very encouraging and very supportive. So my struggles would be largely internal ones, and they would be ones that I've like sort of brought on myself with the narrative I have given myself about the type of teacher I am, the type of a wife that I am, the type of mother that I am. And it would largely go along the lines of, well, you should be doing better, Pippa. You shouldn't, you know, this is not how the other mums do it. This is, you know, not how the other teachers do it. You work harder, get up earlier, get organized. And this kind of internal dialogue going on all of the time where I'm just heaping hot coal on my head, not very useful. So that's not very good. And I think also I told myself for a really long time that, well, you're just really not that smart, are you? You know, you're just kind of average. And there's nothing wrong with being average if, in fact, you are average, of course. Like some, you know, obviously, average is for a reason. But it actually did turn out that when I returned to university to do my master's, I actually got a distinction. And this is the first time I'd returned. This is the first time in education that I'd understood I have ADHD and I'm dyslexic. So when I was at school, I did not know those things about myself. And it turns out that when you understand yourself and you are supported in that way, you can flourish. And I feel like that, you know, like it shouldn't be about survival. It should be about flourishing. Everyone should be able to fulfill their potential. So I feel very lucky, even though it was late, that I've come to this. And I hope that my work will help other people.
Fantastic. And that is an enormously encouraging story there, Pippa. And I'm guessing that that must be something that other women and girls feel as well. Is that where your focus has been?
Yeah, hugely. So the one bit of feedback I get consistently, doesn't matter whether they're 16 or 60, the thing that is repeated back to me so often is, it's so brilliant to talk to someone that gets it, that they just really appreciate being in conversation with someone that has walked their road, that sees them, I guess. So yeah, largely that's it. Yeah, that's what I do. So when I go into school, well, I'm sure the teachers and the parents hope I'm all working on their learning. I would say for girls, probably their biggest struggles are more like social ones. Being in a group, girls are quite complex in their relationships. So girls with ADHD often get tripped up. So that's something I can spend quite a long time talking about. Then in the workplace, later on in life, we can really struggle with feeling that we're less, that we should be, whatever thing, whatever narrative it is, that kind of thing. And as learners, we can be quite down on ourselves. So I hope I encourage and empower people in the work that I do.
I'm sure you do, and it sounds like enormously hard work. So I'm wondering now whether this is something you do all on your own, or do you partner with others to get some of the work done?
So I have my own business. My business is called The Advantage, and the sort of like the goal of The Advantage, let's say, is to help girls and women with ADHD to flourish. As part of that, I wanted to try and create a physical community where women could gather, women with ADHD could gather to learn, to support one another, for creativity, for this kind of thing. And I'm really fortunate that somebody in my circle, Anne Pestu, she has started a business. Her business is called The Holistic ADHD Woman. She's a mind-body practitioner. So she has a bit of different approach to coaching than I do. So we complement each other really well. But I'm so grateful to her to bring her energy to mine to try and get this physical community off the ground. So we're at the stage where we're having in-person events. We're kind of doing it in Welwyn Garden City. There's a brilliant church in Welwyn Garden City who've got amazing facilities who are allowing us to use them. So we had our first workshop at the weekend. It was a vision board workshop. And remarkably, some women came from Bedfordshire and Essex and London, which was really heartening that, you know, people, I think it shows how important it is to us to gather. But I'm so grateful to Anne for partnering on this journey with me. And yeah, and hopefully it will continue to bear fruit, fingers crossed.
I'm sure it will. And I think we need to talk more about this, Pippa. But for now, if people just want to get in touch and find out a bit more, there will be people who've been affected by the conversation that we've just had. So people who do want to get in touch maybe and explore a little bit more how they can get the help and support, how do they do that?
So my website is www.theadd-vantage.co.uk, theadvantage.co.uk. And you can find me on Facebook, The Advantage, again, double D hyphen, and on Instagram, it's just The Advantage with an underscore. And if you're interested in finding Anne, her business is called The Holistic ADHD Woman on Facebook and Instagram. So you can find out about her work there. So yeah, that's how you can find me.
Fantastic. And I think if people just want to Google Pippa Simou, so it's S-I-M-O-U, and ADHD, that will probably take
hopefully them to it will. Yeah, fingers crossed. Yeah.
Excellent. Well, look, Pippa, that's been fantastic. And do let's talk again. But for now, Pippa Simou, thanks so much for talking to us a little bit about your work with women and young girls and their struggles with ADHD.
Thank you so much for having me, Ian.
Football is a very popular game, and the surge in girls wanting to play has been championed and welcomed by Harpenden Colts. This is what Chris Gregory had to say to Neil about the opportunities and benefits of the club.
Thanks for joining us on The Parent Show. I'm Neil Roger. I'm joined this evening by Chris Gregory. Now, Chris is the chair of Harpenden Colts, which is an enormous community football programme in the Harpenden area. Chris, do you want to introduce yourself and explain a bit about Harpenden Colts?
Yeah, thanks, Neil. Yeah, so as you said, I'm Chris. I'm the chair of Harpenden Colts. I've been the chair for about 15 months now, but I've been involved as a parent and a coach for about 4 or 5 years. And actually played for the club when I was a youngster as well, growing up in Harpenden. So it's quite a nice full circle that's gone on. And the club's 1,500 players, boys, girls, and an inclusive section. It's about 1,100 boys, about 350 girls, and then an inclusive section, and actually now more recently an adult team as well. So yeah, we're growing every year, which is really exciting.
I imagine things have changed a little bit since you were playing.
Yeah, just a little bit. I think the facilities, for one, we've got some amazing facilities now in Harpenden. We've got 2 3G pitches that we use, one at Roundwood, one at Harpenden Town in Rothamsted Park. Yeah, a far away from training up at the Oval on a muddy, wet Saturday morning now. I don't think the girls and boys understand how lucky they are.
So, look, in terms of the numbers, it's so staggering how many kids play for Harpenden Colts. And I know it myself, just from walking around Harpenden, you know, you see kids in the tracksuits most days along with the coaches. Why do you think it's so popular?
Oh, it's a number of reasons. I mean, it's huge. We've calculated at some point, we think it's about a quarter of the families in Harpenden are connected to Colts in some way. They have a child playing or they had a child playing. It's phenomenal. I think it's got to do with the size of Harpenden. It's sort of a one club town to a certain extent. There are a couple of clubs that are springing up. But it's just been fortunate enough to be in the right time, the right town and the right place. And the people who ran the club before I did have done a really great job just setting it up. I mean, it's an FA charter standard club. It's the highest rating you can get. It's safe. It's fun. As you say, we all wear the same kit, whether you're in the boys, the girls or the inclusive section. So there's a home and away kit, and they'll be either see them in blue or you'll see them in red. And it's, yeah, on a Saturday and Sunday morning, it is everywhere around town, which is a great advertisement for the club. And it just, the momentum just grows from there. It's sort of the place that if someone says, where shall I play football in Harpingdon, or where shall I take my youngster to? I like to think that Colts is in the conversation somewhere.
What are some of the benefits for the kids taking part? Because I know it spans quite a few ages, right? So what are the kind of different benefits of the kids joining Colts and being part of it?
Yeah, absolutely. A lot of the benefits are no different to the benefits we feel as adults when we're taking part in something, a team sport or something where you're being active with other people. But yeah, we span under sevens to under 18s. And now I said we've got an adult men's team as well to try and get the youngsters through into adult football. The main benefits we're looking to sort of provide is a fun and safe place to come and learn to play football. And it's not all about winning. Certainly the first 5 or 6 years of a 12-year stay with us, you'll be about becoming the best player you can be. And then it becomes about playing as part of a team and trying to win some matches, and things become a little bit more competitive as they get a little bit older. But we stream our teams. So we've got an ability level for all abilities, whether you're in the boys or the girls sections. We try and put a similar ability player together, which just allows them to get lots of touches, allows them to enjoy themselves. And yeah, so our main driver is around physical health as well as mental health. And I think the mental health one's become more and more important recently for all of us, or something we've become more and more aware of, is that it's not just about running around to help your heart and your muscles and your youngsters sort of grow properly. It's as much about helping them to sleep, helping them to make friends, helping them to learn to win and lose, helping them to feel part of something. And equally, we have to be careful when some players don't feel part of something. And we take that really seriously. And we've got an amazing welfare team that will support players and parents to make sure that they're enjoying their stay with us, and that we pick up any challenges that might be there with opposition teams that we play against. So there's a real family feel to it. And it's not just the players, the numbers are staggering, because we couldn't do it without the parents. We have 400 volunteers at the club. 300 of them are coaching and 100 of them are helping us run the club. So there's a 20 strong committee that run the club. We've only got 3 paid roles within the club. So the administration and the running of the club is predominantly 90% done by parents and volunteers. And they do an amazing job, and they've really bought into the philosophy and the ethos of the club. And we try to keep them on track as best we can around that philosophy, and not being about winning all the time, about making new friends, having fun, learning to win and lose. All the things that you'd want for your child to learn from a team sport is really important to us.
So have you noticed then, because obviously women's football has absolutely come out the traps lately, you know, particularly around the Lionesses, you know, just inspiring the nation, everyone getting behind them. Have you noticed more girls joining, and how has that worked for Colts?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the Lionesses have been brilliant. If I think about the history of the club, so the club was formed in 1975-ish with one team, and there was just boys teams. And it wasn't until about 2006-07 that the girls section was set up. So it's relatively new in the life of the club. And since 2007, we've gone from like one team of, you know, 15 girls to, you know, just shy of 400. So somewhere between 350 and 400 girls, which is amazing. And we've now got multiple teams at every age group, which is really exciting. But particularly in the last 6 years, we've seen a doubling of the numbers of girls playing football in Colts, which is really exciting. And it is our number one priority in the club, is to grow the girls section and to create a pathway from under sixes all the way through into adult women's football, which was really exciting last year because Harpenden Town set up their first women's team. And then this season, they've set up an under 23s development team. So we now have a pathway from under six all the way through to under 23s and then into an adult team if the girls want to follow in those footsteps of the Lionesses. So yeah, really exciting. Girls football is a real priority for us. I think the only thing that's slightly maybe holding it back is just volunteers. It's just, we've got plenty of coaches and plenty of administrators, what we really need is squad leads. And squad leaders are just a slightly more experienced coach or someone who's prepared to take the lead and do an FA qualification. And that allows them to then be a squad lead and lead a squad in a league. If we had some more parents volunteering to do that, then we would be growing even quicker. So that's the only thing. We've had a real push on mums coaching across the club over the last 2 or 3 years as well. And we've now got mums coaching in both the boys and the girls section, which is amazing to think that many of those mums wouldn't have played football before because it wasn't something they were offered the opportunity to do when they were growing up. So it's really brave of them to step forward and do that, gain the confidence. We support them to get the knowledge and the experience. So we're really appreciative of our mums, but we'd like more of them to join us. But yeah, so squad leads is probably the only thing that's just stopping us growing even more. We've got small waiting lists that we'd love to empty if we could just find a few more squad leads to lead girls' squads.
Do they have to be parents? In theory, if someone was listening to this and was interested in getting into women's football and was interested in exploring being a squad lead, would that be an option or has it got to be a parent really?
The squad lead role, we like a parent to take on that responsibility because they'll follow the squad most of the way through the 12 years or for a period of time from the point they take over because they've got a vested interest, their youngsters in there. They'll build a relationship with the youngsters. We do have a handful of coaches, we don't need many to be honest, who aren't parents of the club or whose kids have actually gone all the way through, come out the other end, and they've then gone, I'll go and help another squad, which I think is amazing when they've given 10, 12 years of their time to volunteer, that they come back through and do that. And we do encourage that, but we don't really need it as much. But yeah, squad leads, we like them to be parents, but we will consider that if they're not, and maybe for a year or two to get a squad going, we may consider that whilst a parent becomes confident enough to take on that role. But yeah, we like them to be parents because then they've got a vested interest long term in the club and the welfare of the youngsters.
Yeah, that makes sense. So look, here's the thing about football, right? So football, and I think I'm looking at dads here, to be honest, football's one of those things that dads like their kids to be good at. Or I'm not generalising, but do you know what I mean? It's a bit different to like skateboarding or tennis or so many other games that a lot of dads want their kids to be really good at football. Whereas speaking as someone who loves football and is no great shakes, is it becoming a bit trickier as Colts gets more and more kind of, I don't know if professionalised is the word, but it gets better instruction, more kind of serious almost. Is there still room for kids who just want to come along, enjoy it, play, and in some ways don't worry that you're not going to end up playing to any standard? It's just for fun. Is there still a kind of route for those kids?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think there's multiple routes in Colts, which is good. The size of the club allows us, and I mentioned the streaming that we do, and we don't do that streaming of players to make sure that we've got the strongest top squad and that they're winning all the competitions. We stream because our belief is the best way to develop players and anything in life is to be practicing it and doing it every week with a similar ability cohort. If you're spending your time training with a group that keep the ball dribble past you every time and you get about 5 touches during training or in a match, there's no fun in that. So we try to just, from under sevens onwards, by the first half term, we're trying to sort of identify them. We do a soft stream and we try and put youngsters in the right ability group for them. Because even at 6, there are some players coming in who've played football since they were 2 and 3, since they could walk and they've been kicking a ball. And then there'll be some that, you know, football wasn't their parents' activity and they haven't kicked a ball much. So there's quite an ability gap already opening up at under sevens at 6 years old. But we absolutely relish that. We've got a curriculum where we teach them all the fundamental ball skills and ball sensitivity. So every squad's doing the same session, whether they're the slightly stronger squad or whether they're the slightly weaker squad in the year group, they're all getting the same curriculum. The coaches are delivering the same thing. So I've watched youngsters come in at under sevens and be sort of placed in that slightly weakest group. And they have developed and they've worked hard and they found themselves shooting up into the, you know, into the stronger squads quite quickly because they've got a real natural ability for sort of, or they're a natural athlete. And then we've got some youngsters that actually those 2 or 3 weaker groups, that's absolutely where they enjoy it. That's where they've made their friends. They like the slightly less competitive side of it in the matches. And they can just work their way through for 12 years playing in those level of squads. So yeah, it's really important to us that we find the right level, and we constantly review the players to look at, you know, have they just got slightly stronger? Have they not grown? And maybe they need to just be held back into a squad for just a year to build their confidence. There's so many things that happen as they grow up from a six-year-old into a teenager that happen. So we just try and make that movement something that happens normally, just generally, so that the squads don't get too stuck in their ways. And then the other way we can do it is that we actually launched this summer our first training-only programme. Because we got the new pitch at Rothamsted, the new 3G pitch, it gave us more training time. Because we had 450 on the waiting lists, we opened up a summer programme, and it's now running all year round between 5 and 6, Monday to Thursday, and it's just training. And it's led by our young coaches, our 14, 15, 16, 17-year-olds, led by our head coach. He oversees it, who's George, who's a UEFA A licensed coach, which is like our highest coaching qualification you can get. Now, you can't be a Premier League manager unless you've got that qualification. Well, he's got that qualification. So he oversees it. And they just play football. And they do some little drills and skills to start off with, and they play lots and lots of football. And then the youngsters don't have the pressure of needing to play in the team on a Sunday or a Saturday. They can just get used to it. And then the idea being that when a space becomes available in our squads, our match playing squads, if those youngsters want to move into it, they absolutely can. And yeah, we had 250 sign up for that in the first summer. So we have, although we've got 1,500 playing regular football, we've now got another 250 who are just training with us. And some of those 250 are existing members that wanted a second go at football. But more than half of them are from our waiting list and are experiencing football with Colts for the first time. And the amazing thing is it's on the main pitch at Harpenden Town. So last night we trained, and then the first team and reserves are all coming on straight after us. And you've got these little 7, 8-year-olds sort of looking up as these adults coming past them onto the pitch, and they can stay and watch them. So it's quite exciting what's going on at the moment. It's the first year we've done that, but we're really excited to offer more youngsters an opportunity to play with Colts, or to at least train with Colts until we've got more spaces available.
Oh, that's fantastic, because it is always my worry with football, because as I say, I love football, but it's always my worry that it increasingly becomes something that only the kids who are good at it get any value out of it. So it's really good to hear that you're kind of like making those arrangements.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's... And we're constantly reminding parents about their behaviour on the touchline and the way they interact with their youngster to and from the games, you know, because I think we've probably all experienced our parents overcoaching us or telling us stuff on the sideline that bothers us, or having a chat in the car before and afterwards. So we make lots of effort to say, you know, this is as much about trying to be the best footballer. It's about having fun. And here's what we're telling them as coaches. Please, if you are going to have a conversation with them, can you have a conversation that's aligned with what we're asking them to do, so that you're not taking it in a different direction to us? And the great thing is now the FA have lots of weekends where you do like a silent weekend where the supporters can't do anything but clap and cheer, and they're not allowed to coach. They're not allowed. And even we've tried it where the coaches aren't allowed to coach, which was a fascinating experiment to see how the youngsters communicated themselves and worked out problems. It was quite frustrating for the coaches, but I thought it was a fascinating experiment. So it's really good. We've got lots going on.
Yeah, I've never heard of that silent weekend. That is such a good idea. So look, Chris, before you go, you've been involved with Colts for quite a long time. What are your own kind of highlights of your time with Colts? What are some of the things you're most proud of?
Yeah, a couple of things. I mean, when I was playing myself, the proudest thing that I've got from my playing days, we were reasonably successful. So we won some trophies and things, and that was great. And I have great memories of that. But I was away last weekend with 5 mates that I started Colts with at under sevens in 1988 or something like that. And we're still friends now. Until recently, we were still playing Sunday football with each other, even though some of them lived in London, some of them lived in Harpenden, some of them in Essex, and they were coming back to play football on a regular basis. So my proudest moment from my time is still having the friends, some of the friends that I made at Colts all those years ago, which I think is an amazing thing to be able to say. And then from my time as coaching and chair, It's two things. The curriculum. So we've got a curriculum now as a club. So from under 11s downwards, and we move it up a year every year, we've got a consistent curriculum that every year group does the same session on their training night. That's boys and girls. So they're getting that consistent offer, which I think is really exciting. And I'm really interested to see where that goes in when we've run it through the whole club in 12 years' time and the level that players are at then compared to where they were when we started, the consistency of that level. And then the final bit is the facilities, which I touched on right at the start. It's an amazing... Harpenden Colts is so lucky. We've had to invest six figures in two pitches over the last 10 years. So we've had to, you know, generate some money and spend that wisely. But we now co-own or co-manage two 3G pitches in Harpenden, one at Roundwood, one at Rothamsted. And that, what that does is really safeguards our future as a club, because it, we get a 20-year rolling license on those pitches to use those hours and those slots. So that means for the next 20 years, and for as long as we decide we want those slots on those pitches, they can't be taken away from us. So as a club, to have every child in a club the size we are, which is 1,500, training on one of two 3Gs in Harpenden, that's quite exceptional. And I think sometimes we take that for granted. But yeah, we shouldn't, because most clubs are having to travel a fair distance, or they're training on grass or substandard pitches or things like that. So yeah, those two for me, from a chairman and a sort of coaching phase, is the facilities and the curriculum, because it's really exciting to see where we'll be in 5, 6, 10 years time with the development of our players.
And yeah, just from being in the area and knowing families involved with Colts and knowing you, I've seen how much it's grown. And I think, I know you're too sound to say it yourself, but I think you can be really proud of what you've achieved with it, because I know how much work and effort you put in, but I know you wouldn't want to show off about that. But one opportunity to show off, do you want to quickly talk us through a Chris Gregory goal from the past? Your favourite ever goal for Colts?
My favourite ever goal for Colts? I don't know if I can remember many goals for Colts, but I was a striker, so I was quick. So it would have been something around, you know, a through ball, running, latching onto it, running through, either chipping the keeper or going round the keeper. I think they're always my favourite ones. So yeah, I was a quick number nine. So I was lucky enough to score a few goals in my time, and yeah, loved every minute of playing for Colts.
So for kids today who want to understand that, we'll say it's, you're loosely a kind of Jamie Vardy figure. That's what we're going for there.
Well, I was in my youth, but then when I got into adult football, I ended up coming further and further back into the positions where you didn't need that pace. But yes, I was like a Jamie Vardy of my day in the 1980s and 90s when I played.
Oh, great stuff, Chris. Thank you so much. Just quickly, how can people find out more about Colts if they want to learn a bit more?
Yeah, good question. So our website, harpendencolts.com, all the information's there on the homepage and subsequent pages if you flick through it. But really, the homepage has a drop down about membership. And if you put yourself on the waiting list, you can do that from under sevens onwards, which is year two. And then once you're in that system, once you've registered your interest, although you might not get a place in our playing squad straight away, what you'll get offered every term is an opportunity to play in our that training only program, which is what we call the Player Development Centre, which is like PDC for short. So as long as your child's name and you as a parent are registered via that waiting list, you will get to hear about everything that's going on with Colts. And I just urge anyone who's in that under sevens group coming through to next September to register your child now, both boys and girls, because the spaces go very quickly. And then that will guarantee you. And also think about volunteering for the club, because that also gets you moved up the waiting list slightly further if you're prepared to volunteer and help run the club. But yeah, the homepage of the website is where to go and look at the membership section.
Brilliant. Well, look, Chris, always a pleasure. Thank you so much for joining us on the Parents Show. As I say, you've done a fantastic job with Colts, and yeah, long may it continue. Thanks for joining us.
No worries. Thank you, Neil.
Chris Gregory of Harpenden Colts was talking to Neil Roger.